Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 26, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Oscars Long.
Oh, did you do the pool this year?
Oh, I do everything. I got a party, I got games, I got decorations.
Wow, decorations too?
I go way out on the Oscar.
Wow.
I have not only seen all Best Picture nominees, I have seen all pictures nominated for any of the four acting categories as well, too.
Holy cow.
It's almost hard to believe that I can run a business at the same time.
I don't think I've seen any of the movies. I think we balance out the averages together.
I'm excited for award season there. Obviously, it's American Poker Awards today, too, which we won't know because taping now. But
right.
It's award season.
It is award season. It is. This is like the culmination of the award season, too, right? This is like all the ones leading up to this, and then it ends.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, if you work for a newspaper, there's always going to be another award season like the next week, so.
Yeah.
So all your reporters can get 100 different awards from other reporters, because, you know, you need to validate yourself.
But we got some big news again. You know, it seems like every time we have a slow week, we're like, oh, we need another thing to talk about in the show, and then the World Series always bails us out.
Well, I would say it was bails us out, but they have fortuitous timing.
Yeah.
We did, so. Oh, no, we've been waiting for the World Series dates to be announced, and they have been now. 69 events this year will run from May 31st to July 18th, before, of course, coming back to November 9th. Complete schedule can be found at WSOP.com or WSOP.com. Like to say. So we're not going to go over all that, but they always throw a couple Easter eggs out. I think I'm always very impressed with their PR apparatus because they're very good at not just drowning you with all the cool stuff in one thing that you can't digest. They, like, throw things out every couple of while. You know?
Yeah.
They kind of teased us, like, a month ago when they let us know the dates with some other stuff. Now we got the schedule, and they're throwing a couple more things out there. So just kind of run through this stuff and stop me if there's something you want to talk about.
Okay.
But some of the new events this year, they're going to do a event four. Should be a $1,000 top up turbo no limit hold 'em event. Sounds like something should be in Mad Max, nominated for Best Picture.
I did see that movie.
Oh, of course you saw that one. Yeah, the absolute worst one.
I know. I saw it for free, so.
All right. So nice. So, so this one's kind of interesting. Actually, I do want to talk about this. So, it's a unique hybrid event. They say it's going to be a live poker tournament, but if players who play in cash in a $55 single table satellite, WhatsApp.com, or live at the Rio just prior to the event, will be able to boost their stack to double with starting chips. Hmm. So, in other words, if you just show up and buy in, you're going to have half as many chips as somebody that played a satellite.
Right.
Probably a good way to get people onto the online site, which is always a big goal for them, I think.
Right. We wrote a little bit about how the WSOP.com is starting to help really funnel people to these things. So that's another way of doing it. That's it encourages them to get website traffic. So interesting.
A couple of these next ones, not too exciting. Pot Limit Omaha, but it's at $565, which is the lowest ever price point for PLO. Which actually, you know, anytime you get under $1,500 for a World Series seat now, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
$2,000 no limit, the new price point for poker's most popular game. I'm not really sure people are clamoring for a $2,000 buy-in, but hey, it's there if you want it. a $2,500 mixed triple draw lowball featuring ace to five in addition to deuce to seven of the Dookie.
Ooh.
I don't know of how long it's been since they've had a ace to five lowball then, or even a variation.
Yeah, really?
Is that Kansas City, I think?
California is what?
I don't know.
Kansas City is deuce to seven. California is ace to five, I think.
Ah, okay. There we go.
Yeah.
It's one of those crazy states.
Yep.
But actually, nowhere near as fun as deuce to seven. You know, it's one of those things that, like, kind of like Chinese poker. You know, once they decide to go to open faced, and you're like, who wants to play regular anymore?
Yeah.
And then once they come up with pineapple, who wants to play non-pineapple?
Non-pineapple.
I think that's what kind of happened when deuce to seven came along. Everybody's like, ace to five, who wants to play that? Well, apparently somebody does because it's on the schedule now.
Yeah.
A little mixed no limit PLO. Doesn't seem very new to me, but whatever. And then a mixed pot limit Omaha 8, Omaha 8 Big O. A trifecta in the Omaha variant, they say.
Man.
So I know, Gambit, I know you are going to be fighting to be the first one to register for this.
Yes, I will be first in line. And who's our friend Steve that won the bracelet?
Yeah, one of our cruise passengers.
You know, he'll be in that one.
Oh, absolutely. He loves the Big O.
Yeah.
All right, and then the $888 Crazy Eights eight-handed no-limit hold'em event with an $888 prize. Wow.
$888,888 guaranteed for first.
What do you mean eight? This is one of those kind of like, you know, hey, let's... This is like the event, like, all right, so we've got 68 events now, and we've been drinking all night. But we need one more event. I know. Let's do something with nothing but eights.
They were probably sitting around playing the game Crazy Eights and say, we should make this a poker tournament somehow.
They probably were like, they probably shouted one guy down and said, hey, what if we took all the cards out of the deck but the eights? And then, whoa, dude, you went too far now. And then this one I think is interesting. I have some things to talk about this too. $1,000 tag team no limit hold'em event. 2 to 4 person teams must register together. It's $1,000 per team. So really it's only $250 per person.
Yeah, if you play 4 person team, yeah.
But all members of the winning team will get their own, what's up, gold bracelet.
Oh, man.
All right, so a lot of things I like about this. One, I like team tournaments. We used to do team tournaments with Annie Up.
Yep.
They were a lot of fun, too, I thought. So I'm a big fan of team tournaments. Obviously, a $250 price point to play in the World Series is unheard of, right?
Right.
That's assuming you have a 4-person team. The fact that everybody gets their own bracelet is kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
So now what I'm wondering is, obviously the price point's so low that I'm not too worried about this, but I was wondering on my morning walk this morning, you know, if you are one of these fat cat poker backers, right?
Right.
People can't play, but have a lot of money, and you put your horses in the tournament and hope to get money, right?
Right.
The one thing you don't get when you back a World Series bracelet winner, you get a lot of money, don't get me wrong, that's awesome.
Right.
You don't get a bracelet.
I know where you're going with this.
Right? So, all right. So, I didn't read the whole structure sheet, so I could be a little wrong, but I believe it said that the rule is that every member of the team has to play one level of the blinds.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, if I'm correct in that, and like I said, I need to read more, but if I'm correct in that, it's possible that I could be some kind of fat cat idiot poker player, right?
Yeah.
Put together 3 amazing professional players on my team. I play the first round and essentially rock solid, right?
Yeah.
Don't enter any pots, fold everything, and then let these guys win, and I get a bracelet.
Here's the deal. I think that's hilarious, and, you know, kudos to you for being the funny one. But
I wasn't even trying to be funny. I think it's a legitimate thing.
No, I know, but I'm just saying it's $1,000 per team. How many guys actually need backers that they can't afford $250 themselves? That they're going to have to get some guy who wants to get a bracelet so desperately that he's entering.
Well, no, here's the thing is you could say, hey, I'm going to push you guys in, and you guys chop up the money 3 ways. I just want my bracelet.
Oh, okay. So you're just paying $1,000 for a bracelet.
There you go.
Yeah, that's terrible. I could buy them on eBay for $350 probably.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
But it is the same. You bought it, you sat and folded every hand, and then you know.
In a technical sense, you and I know it's about the same. I mean, I'm not going to respect any guy that folded for an hour in a tournament having a bracelet versus the guy that just goes on eBay and buys one.
Yeah.
But it's still legitimate. You're still going to have your picture, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be listed in the annals of WhatsApp history. No?
I guess, yeah. It's a bizarre tournament. It's a fun tournament. I mean, that sounds like... I mean, that's something we could do. You know what I mean? We could put together Faso, me, you, and Gambit and go do it.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, I'm sure it's going to run over the place. And July 7th, I think that... It must be like the last event before the main event starts, right? Or... After, and I actually didn't see when the main event starts. But yeah, probably. I'm going to guess July 8th, right? So yeah, you figure they're going to have 15,000 people in town ready to play anyhow. So, hey, it's a little fun warm-up thing.
That's pretty cool. It sounds like fun. And I always thought team tournaments would do... Like, we had some really cool ideas with our team tournament, and it just never flew.
Yeah, yeah. And ours would never work in the World Series, but... and this one, too, the other thing I noticed, too, is, I mean, all the players are outside the ropes. And can tag in at any time. So, I mean,
yeah.
It's part of the reason that we really liked our team tournament was that there was a rooting interest for your teammates.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they do have that. So I'll give them credit for that. But it'd be interesting to see how that turns out.
That's cool.
A couple changes, they said this year. They are now paying down 15% of the field for most of the events. Used to be 10%. And now the minimum payout is expected to be 1.5 times the buy-in. So more people are going to get money. Obviously, if you're in the top 10%, that's going to suck.
Yeah, if you're the top three guys, you're losing a lot of money.
In the money earlier, so with the payouts increasing, many events are expected to reach the money on day one. So you don't have to come back the next day only to find out you're a loser.
Yeah.
They moved start times up 1 hour to kind of help with that. And now 5 times starting chips in all $10,000 buy-in events, including the main event. So you're going to start with $50,000.
Oh, man.
I believe the other ones are still 3 times the amount. So remember the good old days when we started with $10,000?
Yep.
You started with whatever you bought in for,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Now it's all the way up to $50,000.
Can you imagine, you know, they came out with that big round chip for the main event because they were getting too many chips in play and they want to distinguish it. With everyone starting with 50,000 chips, they're going to need like a Frisbee-sized chip at the end of this thing. They're like, all right, this one's worth 2 million, this chip right here. Thud. You throw it in the middle of the table. I mean, there's going to be so many chips in play in this main event. It's going to be sick.
Yeah, and they probably won't color up either, so you have like, you know, stacks and stacks and stacks.
Right? Oh, it's going to be crazy.
Now, of course, every time you get something good, they have to do something to make sure it's not too good. And because of the starting chips, they're going to tweak the structures a little bit, skip a level here or there. And they said one example was instead of a 100-200 level followed by a 100-200 with a quarter ante, it'll just start out at the 100-200 quarter ante level.
Wow.
So you lose a round or two of play by getting those extra chips. Wow. Which, again, this happens all the time when I talk to players. Oh, they complain, I want more chips! And you get these really smart managers like, all right, 100,000 chips, here you go. Let me take out 7 of these levels.
I know.
It's the same tournament.
Okay, you want 100,000 chips? Okay, blinds are 10,000, 20,000 with a 5,000 ante.
Chips are only one ingredient in the soup, folks.
Yep.
All right, now this is going to be a big one for everybody that kind of suffered through the Colossus last year. You're playing into the money on day one. So once you, if you make it to day two, you're going to get paid out that night. And instead of those long-ass lines that people had to wait in last year and sometimes couldn't get paid. And they're only going to let you register for one flight at a time in Colossus and the other big ones, the Millionaire Maker and that crazy, crazy, crazy eights thing.
Right.
So in other words, so last year one of the big problems is that everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people would go to the Colossus and register for all 4 flights at once. And then unregister from the flights when they advanced in one of the other ones. And what that ended up being is lots of empty tables that were supposedly sold, but people aren't sitting down. So this will eliminate that now, or should help at least.
That's cool. Yeah, say what you want about the World Series. Every year they always try to tweak. You know, it's not like they're just staying stagnant, and you know they're always trying to and for the most part, you think that everything they're doing is to make it better. You know what I mean? And not just for them. You know, it's for the players. So,
well, at the very least, they're constantly innovating.
Yeah.
Some people like are traditionalists and don't like to see innovation. I'm not one of those people in poker or in life. So I'm always excited to see people trying new things. Some will work, some won't. And obviously they listened to folks last year on things that didn't work and they're trying to make them better this year. We'll find out. So yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I give them credit for, you know, keeping it fresh and listening to folks. I did not see the press release and I'm still waiting for will soda be less than $10 this year?
Yeah, that's funny.
Probably not. Probably not.
Got to smuggle your own soda in.
I just might do that. I like the cruise ship. I'll be like, you know.
Now, you talked about the Global Poker League. That's the draft is today, right?
Well, yeah. Today, on the as we're recording. On
right, Thursday.
The show is technically February 26th. So, right. Yeah, by the time most people are listening here, the Global Poker League draft will be completed. But this week, Steve Ruddock had an interesting post on a site called uspoker.com that popped up in my feed that I thought was kind of worth discussing. Now, he said he wondered whether the league will struggle from being too popular. And again, we back up the Global Poker League is this new league where I think there's like 12 franchises around the country.
Right? Around the world.
World, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
So his theory is that more players registered to be drafted that perhaps were expected to. I think there's like more than 300. And he said, and even with recently enlarged rosters, they added some spots to all the teams, there won't be room for even half of the eligible draftees on a team. So he wonders, will those players not drafted be resentful and take to social networking to bemoan their exclusion? And if so, what can be done about it? Increase team rosters, expand to more teams. He had lots of answers, or lots of questions, not a lot of answers.
Doesn't this, you seem to think that this is something we're talking about. I just wonder if this guy is making a problem where it doesn't even exist.
Well, it's like, he seems to think this is something we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think this is a problem.
My answer was going to be, yeah, I think what you just said, that I think he's probably worrying about a problem that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah. Like, he's worried about bad media already. I mean, you don't even know, first of all, if that's going to happen. And that's a weird thing to think about. I mean, because now there's social media, we have to worry that people who don't get drafted are going to neg rep this place or something. I mean, it just doesn't...
Well, in all fairness, that's what social networking was existed to be, is to allow people to bitch about stuff rather than deal with their problems.
Yeah, well, it also exists
so people
to...
are going to complain no matter what. But anyhow, go ahead.
So, but it also exists to do the positive, too, to say, boast, what, hey, I got picked. This is great. Follow us. Well, I'm on the team, you know, and... Hey, if you didn't get picked, you're not good enough, or you don't have a good enough relationship with these people, you know? Buy them some drinks. Be friendly with them. Do something to change your thing next year.
Bribe your way on.
Bribe your way on, whatever.
Well, I mean, I guess the first thing that came to mind is that not every college player that enters the draft gets drafted in football, right?
Exactly.
And certainly not every high school kid that can throw a 93-mile-per-hour fastball gets drafted, right?
Right.
And obviously some of those people are disappointed, rightfully so, and probably some of them grumble on Facebook or Twitter. All right, free country. It's not like it's destroyed the NFL or the Major League Baseball or anything like that, right?
I don't know. Texas A&M running back didn't get drafted. He's going to take down the NFL via Twitter. I mean, come on. I mean, I respect Ruddock coming up with an interesting idea and a thought to fill his blog or whatever, but... I mean, seriously? I mean, even if the guy, even if every single player on the planet that didn't get drafted bitches on, does that mean I'm not going to turn on the television, see Global Poker League, and say, oh, I'm not going to watch it because those guys on Twitter were bitter they didn't get drafted?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
And again, we're talking about a small amount, too. I think there's, 12 franchises and 7 players on it, so I didn't do the math. Well, that 94, right?
Yeah.
Out of 230 or something that weren't qualified. So we're talking a small number of people that were qualified or eligible, however they did it.
Yeah.
Eligible to be drafted, that will be drafted.
Yeah, it's like the movie 300. It's like these 100 guys who didn't get drafted are going to take down this behemoth of an army, you know, because they're upset they didn't get drafted. No, I don't think it's going to be like that. Besides, I mean, maybe, you know, you get... Do you have to, like, register to be drafted? Like,
Yes. Yeah. You had to apply, and there were certain qualifications, and I'm not sure exactly what they were. So they said, like, I think 300 people or so applied, and then 70, 80 of them were told, hey, you didn't actually read the instructions.
Right.
you're not eligible. So, but yeah, left around a little bit more than 200 to fill those 94 spots.
Well, you never know. Some people have some serious power on there, but I just don't think that that's going to keep people from tuning in or paying attention or following their favorites.
We don't even know what we're tuning into.
I know.
I mean, that's all true. We have is these broad strokes and this idea of how this is going to play out. I mean, remember how excited everybody got over the PPL, was that right?
Yeah.
And then the whole Epic Poker League thing, and those ended up, I mean, the one just never got traction. The other one crashed and burned big time. So, you know, until we actually have something out there that people really have a value on, I don't know what the big deal is.
Yeah, I agree.
I think this is more of a discussion to have next year when this thing actually has a very successful first year, and then we got to, like, hey, do we need to add teams? Do we need to make teams bigger? Whatever. And I'm quite certain that Travis will figure that all out at that point.
Yeah.
I think. So, premature. But, hey, you got us to talk about it, right?
Yep. Hey, we got some Ante updates. Our good friends at Palm Beach Kennel Club in West Palm Beach, Florida will be awarding 20 Ante Up Poker Cruise packages for our April 18th sailings to the Bahamas over 4 days in March. They high hand every 30 minutes from 10:30 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. on March 4th, 5th, 11th, and 12th will win a package. That's huge.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. 20 packages.
They're going to be packed on those days. Also, Ameristar Vicksburg in Mississippi is awarding an Ante Up Poker Cruise package for our April 18th sailing to the Bahamas at 11 p.m. every Wednesday through March 16th. Players can earn tickets by getting a flush or better all week long. For more information on all of our Ante Up Poker Cruises, visit anteupcruises.com. That's going to be a good sailing, man.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of activity in the poker rooms and getting people stoked about it. So
somebody just bought a quad last night, and people are still buying cabins. So I mean, they're doing really well. So it should be a good one. Come out and play with us. Okay. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we'll do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in... You know, every week I struggle with saying that.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. It's the two shh noises back to back. It's too early in the morning. My tongue doesn't work that fast.
Yeah, I hate those nooshes. Pain of my existence.
It comes from Marco Cerna. He says, how do they determine how many places to pay in a rebuy tournament?
All right, so I like this question for one reason. I mean, obviously, it's a very easy answer, which we'll get to.
Right.
But it also kind of gives us the opportunity to talk about rebuy and re-entries.
Yes.
There's so much confusion over that.
Yes.
But I know you answered Marco right away, so I'm going to let you answer the easy one.
I did. I told him it makes no difference. It's always a percentage what they pay. The rebuy tournament is just more money getting added to the prize pool. So the pool is growing, not the positions. Whereas a re-entry would change because a re-entry counts as another player, so the field grows. The percentage still stays the same, but more people get paid because the larger the field, the larger the percentage works its way down the number. So basically, a rebuy is just the money just grows in the fund, but same amount of people stay in the tournament, then it's a percentage of people.
So a quick math problem there. Let's say we're going to pay 10% of the field. Let's say 15% of the field. That's what the World Series is doing, right?
All
right. So we got 100 players in the tournament. We're going to pay 15 spots, right?
Right.
If it's a rebuy tournament and everybody rebuys once, we're still going to pay 15 spots because there's still 100 entries.
Right.
Right?
Right.
If it's a re-entry tournament and everybody re-enters once, now we're paying 30 spots because now there's 200 official entries.
Exactly.
That makes it easy.
That was nice and easy.
All right, excellent. But again, I think people get hung up on the difference between rebuy and re-entry, and it's becoming less of a problem because it's very hard to find rebuy tournaments now, I think.
Right.
The easy way to remember it is a rebuy tournament. You are staying in your seat. You are just buying more chips. Money goes to the prize pool, makes the prize pool bigger, but you're not a new entrant into the tournament. And in most cases, you're not paying more rake.
Right.
Generally, that rebuy money all goes to price.
Right.
In a re-entry situation, you are getting up out of your seat, going back up to the podium, as if you just walked in off the street and want to enter. So you are a brand new player in the light of the tournament, and you're going to pay the same rake and dealer add-ons and all that stuff that you did the first time, and then you will be placed in a different seat in the tournament, unless, of course, the only seat left is yours.
Right.
And this actually came up on our last cruise, one of the, because we always have, we are, have this kind of discussion with our players, because we do a rebuy tournament on a cruise still, which is really popular, and then the rest of our tournaments are re-entries. And we had a guy get up and get knocked out, and he said rebuy in our re-entry tournament. We're like, that's not a rebuy, come up here and you can re-enter. Unfortunately, we have a wait list to get back in the tournament.
Yeah.
So now you're not going to sit right down, you're going to, we'll get you back in as soon as something comes up. But that's a big consideration when you're playing a re-entry tournament. Are you going to be able to get right back in, or are you going to have to wait? Whereas in rebuy, people, you know, fire, you get like a Daniel Grant who just likes fiery left or right because he's not in danger of losing a seat. He's only in danger of losing the chips in front of him.
Right. He wants more chips in play at his table so that he can win them all back later with bigger stacks. And that's one of the tactics they do intentionally. They keep funding, you know, they play loose.
Plus, you know
play
that, that those chips are going to stay on your table, and yeah, you're going to have a chance to get them back. With re-entry, if you fire like that, get knocked out, there's absolutely no expectation that you're going to be sitting in that same seat. You're
right.
More than likely going to be moved to another table, and to get those chips back you just lost, you're going to have to work your way back to that table.
Yep.
Or those players that have them. So, very, very, they seem very similar, but they're very, very different. So,
yeah,
just be clear on what you're doing when you're in an event like that.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home to the Antiup Group discussions. This comes from Mike B. in Victoria, British Columbia.
Hey, we're visiting that on our cruise this year.
Yay!
I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. He says, in a home game tournament, I got called to a table to make a ruling, and I wonder if it was the correct one. Action had folded to the dealer, who raised. Small blind folds, and the big blind shoves for his remaining stack, and the button has him easily covered in calls. The button deals a flop of 3-4-9 rainbow. Only then do they realize a button somehow pulled one of the other player's muck hands into his hand instead of the muck. No one remembered the exact hands they mucked, and the button initially said he thought he had king-deuce, but then fished out king-4 out of his four cards, giving him a pair versus the big blind's king-jack. The table stopped the action and called me over. Because there were mucked hands mixed into the action and no other money except the small blind and the two player stacks, I declared the hand dead and returned everyone's money and had them re-deal the hand without advancing the button. Spots like this make me realize what a tough job tournament directors have. Good for them for surviving this every day.
Yeah, apparently just survived a dog attack here.
Yeah, still out there barking.
Yeah, I think it's funny. It's this huge, huge dog, and I have this tiny little cat that just sits there and stares and laughs at him. Dog hasn't realized that he can't scare the cat. But he can certainly mess up our show.
I think that's Jennifer Harmon walking him down the street.
All right, back to the poker here. Elliot says, thanks for your empathy, appreciation, and gratitude. And I kind of left that in there so he'd... You did get that empathy, appreciation, and gratitude.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a tough job.
Absolutely.
So he goes on to say, this situation points out why it is so important that all live hands must be turned face up when all action is complete in an all-in situation. This rule was designed to prevent collusion and accomplishes this by protecting every player that bet all-in or called an all-in bet. When the dealer's hand became mucked and unable to be identified, his hand should have been declared dead and his raise forfeited to the winner of the pot. You should not be liable for the amount of the all-in re-raise due to the dealer error, even though he was, in fact, the dealer. Your ruling was merciful and understandable, given that playing while dealing is much harder than it looks, but the devil on my shoulder thinks that the dealer may have realized that he got caught with his hands in the cookie jar regarding his attempted blind steal.
One of the things that I pretty much followed what he said there, but I just wondered about when you have a player that's all in and something happens to his hand, that player, I remember Sam telling us this once, where the all-in player has to have a hand. Like he can't not have, you can't be eliminated without a hand.
Right.
So if your hand somehow gets mucked by accident by the dealer or something, how do you get knocked out of a tournament if they can't find your cards?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's not liable for the amount of the all-in re-raise.
Okay, so he would just go back to the
whatever
it was.
Call was.
Oh, okay. That's what
it was. Unfortunate for the other player because it was his mistake in the situation.
Right.
Because again, he was the dealer. But yeah, in the ultimate fairness is, as you mentioned, you don't want to eliminate somebody from the tournament for not having cards.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was trying to follow what he said, but I got lost within that. Okay. That's cool.
I'm going to use this opportunity to encourage everybody out there that has self-deal tournaments. I know it's kind of awkward, but I think you're going to save yourself a lot of problems. The tournament's going to go a lot smoother if the dealer sits out.
Mm.
As if that player doesn't even exist at that point. You're still going to have the same blinds, the same hand, number of hands and everything, but the dealer needs to focus on dealing.
Yeah.
It's too hard to deal and play at the same time. We run into this in the home game all the time, and we still do it, but, because we don't have that many problems, or at least not as many problems as we used to. But anytime you have a dealer playing, there is a lot of possibility for the dealer to screw up either the deal or his play, and that's really difficult, I think. So yeah. If you can find a way where they can just skip it, you're not in that hand, you're not a real player. I mean, we do that often with the deuce to seven or something in our home game.
Right.
People, right?
Right.
Hey, a dealer sits out. Doesn't cause any problem, right?
Right.
Just let the dealer focus on dealing. You know, obviously, a lot of these home games and poker leagues can't afford to pay dealers to deal, and that's fine. But make it easier on the players and just let them concentrate on dealing that one time.
That's a good point.
And not play. And then you don't have to worry about these situations.
Hey, we have a brand new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $1, $2, no limit hold'em home game. This is our regular game, so we know these players well, and they know us just as well. We bought in for $200 and have worked our stack up to $225. The table is eight-handed. The blinds post, it's folded to an MP who makes the table standard raise of 3x to $6. It's folded back to us on the button, and we look down at the jack of hearts, jack of clubs. We up our opponent's raise from $6 to $18. It's folded back around to the MP, who thinks briefly before calling. This opponent is one of our good friends and started the hand with $200. He's even for the night. He's a solid player, plays ABC poker, and rarely steps out of line. He might even play a little too tight. With about $40 in the pot, the flop comes down the 9 of spades, 8 of hearts, 7 of clubs. This is a pretty good flop for our hand. We have an overpair and a gutshot straight draw. Our opponent thinks for a while, counts out some chips, thinks some more, puts the chips back, and checks. Tens? Sixes? We're going to make a bet. I'm pretty sure we've got the best hand at this point. We bet $25 into the $40 pot. Our opponent thinks again for a time before making the call. There's $90 in the pot, and our heart sinks when we see the ace of clubs hit the turn. We put $45 into this pot, so we're not nearly pot committed. The hand takes another interesting turn when our opponent, seemingly equally disappointed in the ace, checks. I'm not sure I want to put any more money into this one at this point. We check behind. The river is a blank, the four of hearts. Once again, our opponent checks. What's the move?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week, and your hands are situations, the podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And our weekly contributor, Vic G, is back. And actually, we have lots of Hands of the Week coming up. All of them from folks that have already won swag recently, though. So, and Vic has sent us like thousands of hands.
Awesome.
So I kind of wanted to mix it up a little bit, so it's not Vic every week, right?
Right.
But this one was this latest one, and I thought this was really interesting, and I kind of want to get your take on it. So that's why I want to kind of fast-track it on the show this week.
Okay.
All right. He says he's playing a nine-handed, $1, $2, no-limit hold'em game with a $400 maximum buy-in, of course, at his local Florida poker room. Up and down for most of the night. He's in for $800, but sit with just under $500 now. I have everyone covered except the young guy on my left who just doubled up twice. It's an odd table with a mix of older, solid players, which in parentheses he says predictable, and young novice players, in parentheses unpredictable. It's President's Day, and the $100 high hand bonuses every 20 minutes brings a lot of new players into the room. These younger guys hope to hit a $100 high hand bonus and slow play their monsters in the hopes of stacking one of their regulars. So while they are unpredictable, they aren't very good players. I'm going to pause here to say, too, that I'm not dissing this $100 high hand promotion. That's great. But I'm not sure that's going to bring me into a poker room for a 1-2 no limit game.
I know, because you can lose that 100 in a second.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I might come in and play a 2-4 limit or something, which is, you know, a generally a bad game rake-wise, but if I have a chance to hit $100 on a hand, that makes a big difference in my stack in a 2-4 limit game.
Yeah.
About a 1-2 no limit game, you're probably going to be in for 100 trying to chase that $100 high hand.
Yeah, I mean, a good example is what Vic was in for 800. He's at a little under 5.
Yeah.
No, he's not there for the $100 high hand. He's there because he plays a lot, but I mean, look at what happened to him.
Yeah, it's just interesting that actually, I'm kudos to the room if it's working. It obviously sounds like it is, but yeah. It just seems kind of odd that. So I education players here. I mean, be careful what that bonus is. Make sure it actually makes sense for what you're playing.
Yeah.
All right, so the hand. He says, I'm under the gun, look down at the ace of diamonds, king of diamonds. And before you answer, he says, a normal pre-flop raise has been between $12 and $15. In case you feel like raising, Chris.
Yeah, I do feel like raising. I feel like being normal today. So I'll raise 12 or 15, something like that.
All right. I'm going to do the same, whatever the standard raise is for me. So, and he says, the most active player is on the button, and while there have been a lot of limpers, we usually see a raise from someone looking to thin the field. So does that change your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, there are chances when I'll take, you know, that maybe they will do that, and then I can repop them again. But even then, I'm going to be out of position. You know, it's one thing if I'm on the button and I, you know, I'm going to have position, I might take a chance on things because I'm always going to be able to have that power. But in this case, you know, I have ace-king. It depends if I want to get it in with ace-king. If I limp and then somebody makes a 15, then I make it 50 and they make it 150, you know, am I going to go to the mat with ace-king, you know, with all my stack? This isn't a tournament in late stages. I mean, I'm playing a cash game. I'm already down more than 300. You know, so I don't know. I think I would just do what I normally do. There's some unpredictable players, but for the most part, even those unpredictable players are still kind of predictable. So I think I would just raise.
All right, I'm going to kind of say this since they mentioned this, that he's probably going to get a little tricky here, maybe limp. But I'm going to say even before that, I could kind of see that. You know, if I have a pretty good expectation that someone's going to raise this hand anyhow... My problem with ace-king, and it keeps going back, we had this argument all the time, is that it looks great right now, but something has to happen on that flop or turn or river for me to be confident about it, right?
Yeah.
So my concern with raising now is, and I don't know what the table's been like, if the under gun raises, does that shut down the rest of the raising? If that's the case, I definitely raise. But if it's just going to encourage somebody to re-raise, I don't know how excited I am about this particular hand in that case. Certainly I'd call a re-raise, but if it becomes a big raising war, I'm not excited about ace-king until I see something.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I wouldn't want to just limp, let them raise, and then re-raise. Because if I'm going to just call the raise, then
right,
why not raise myself?
Right, and let him do the raising, and then our hand's kind of hidden, I guess.
Yeah.
We just call that raise, assuming that raise is there. And even if we don't get that raise, I mean, it's suited, so we got helps a little bit. It's a good drawing hand now, and we got more people in. As long as we can reconcile in our mind that it's no longer as strong of the hand as we thought it was, right?
Yeah.
I think I might just limp here if that's how the table's going, and hope for a raise, call it, and disguise my hand. Why? You know, under the gun is really, it's an interesting spot to be in, because when you raise, people usually have to give you respect, right?
Yeah.
But it also compels you to continue that string. If you just limp and call, you know, some people are going to be a little fishy about that because we're under the gun. Who limps under the gun? But I would rather have some mystery in my hand.
If
I know it's going to be raised.
It's a weird way to play the hand, though. I mean, the deal is that generally if they're educated in poker with a poker book or something, and you raise under the gun, they generally give you credit for one of the group one hand. You know, even if it's a limit or not, it's no limit, it doesn't make a difference. Ace, king suited is a group one hand, but so is aces and kings and queens. So, I mean, you're thinking, okay, even if you miss the flop, if you raise pre-flop, you're supposed to bet there because ace-king is not a drawing hand in that case. You know what I mean? Then it's like you're representing the group one hands. Ace-king can be part of it, but there's also three other hands that are made hands that are part of it. So you're supposed to bet there, and they still don't know what you have. I have no problem betting with ace-king after I raise with it after the flop and missing. I really don't. I still expect to be ahead most of the time.
Right.
So I don't know. Like he said, it depends on what I want to do after this limp if somebody raises. If I'm just going to call with it, yeah, I guess that's okay because it's disguised, but you never really know what you're up against after that flop. You know what I mean? What was that guy raising with? If I hit my king, what was he raising with? Is it, you know, does he have aces now and now I'm screwed? I don't know. It's interesting. If I re-raise them, then I'm opening it up to raising again, and then I'm like, do I really want to go to the mat with the ace king? So I don't know. Limping's interesting, but it is a fishy move. It's interesting, but I guess it does make it look like a suited ace or a baby, you know, baby pair or something, because right. That's why you're calling. Now you really want to hit that set,
which
you
is
know?
Great. I would love for them to think it's a small pair, because then they have to be even more worried than normal about a set, right?
Yeah, I guess.
That's kind of the problem with sets. You always know they're out there, but you don't want to be paralyzed by it. But you start, you know, looking at the information and what kind of hands limp under the gun.
Right.
Small pair is usually one of those, right?
Yeah.
So now when we come alive, now somebody has to give us a little bit, even more credence for having a set than possible. So it actually makes our hand a little bit more powerful, I think.
I hope that... Well, the other thing, too, is if you're... What did he say the button player was? Well, that's here's the thing: is we don't know who's going to be involved in this hand. Yeah, so he's what's active, but we don't know if these people are the ones that are coming in for the high hands and they're not very, you know, experienced. Then all of this thinking is useless.
There's no race, right?
Yeah, so this all thinking is useless, which is why I usually generally play ABC against these guys and just make a hand and pay, make them pay. But we'll see. We'll see how what happens.
Okay. Vic says, I would normally raise with this hand, but if lots of players limp as they have, I think that the guy in the button will raise and I can 3-bet. Oh, boy, he got me all choked up. So the plan is to limp, hoping to 3-bet. All right, so he chose a completely different line than we did. I was, like, limping, hoping just to call, you were raising, and he's limping, hoping to 3-bet.
Right, and that was one of the scenarios I brought up was, do I want to go to the mat with the re-raise? Because then, okay, now the guy raises again on you because he actually has a hand. Are you going to the mat with it? Are you going to risk the last 500 you have? Because let's face it, if you limp and he makes it 20-something because everyone's limping, you make it 60-something, he makes it 180, you got, you know what I mean? Are you going to fold ace-king suited to 180? And, you know what I mean? Probably not. I don't know. Very few scenarios are where I fold ace-king suited. You know, it really has to be like a 4 or 5-bet thing coming back to me from two players for me to let it go. So I just don't know if I want to go to the mat with ace-king suited, but I can see why he's doing it. So I can't wait to find out what happens.
All right. So we limp, hoping to 3-bet. The guy on his left immediately obliges and raises to $6. Oh, boy. That's always the eye roll for me, the table. It's not a tournament, folks. You raise more than 3x.
Yeah.
There are 4 other limpers, including the button.
Oh, 4 other callers, right? 4 other callers to 6.
Okay.
Yeah,
he's a limper. You're right. 4 other callers, including the button. Both blinds fold, and the action is back on us. So there's $35 in the pot right now, and obviously I have an idea what he's going to do since he already telegraphed it.
But. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's the plan. I got to follow his plan. Here he told us what he wanted to do, so I have to decide how much I'm going to raise then, right?
Because even my plan changes now, because I was expecting a raise of 12 to 15 at some point.
Yeah.
Not a raise of 6.
Yeah.
A bunch of limpers. So now there's a lot of money in there. Now I have to raise, I think. I mean, my hand's not as disguised as it was if it would have been a bigger amount and there are fewer people in. I'm willing to take control of his hand now. That changes everything.
Yeah, it's got
to
be like 30 in the pot now because.
Yeah, it says 35.
Yeah, okay, so 35. So you know, generally you would do 3x times 6 is 18, but you got all these other limpers, so you're adding 6 to every or whatever to all those. Jeez. I'd probably bet pot now. I'd probably make it like 30 to go or something.
Yeah, I'd just say, hey, I'm under the gun. You guys are all clowning around here.
Yeah, I'd make it like 35 or so.
All right, our hero says, I'm going to bet to either thin the field or take down the pot right now. I make it 30 to go. Yeah, fair enough.
That sounds fair.
The original razor calls, but everyone else folds. Wow.
And that pretty much what you desired here. I mean,
yeah, it's actually pretty darn good. A lot of dead money there, and heads up. With 80 bucks in the pot, after the rake, we see a flop of ace of clubs, four of diamonds, three of hearts.
That's,
and we are first act.
Pretty much all we could ask for. I mean, other than maybe top two pair or some sort of set or Broadway. I mean, we had top pair, top kicker.
That's
we got.
We could hope for except for these 100 other hands.
But. No, I know, but I'm saying those are dream hands. I'm talking about just a standard flop. That's a good flop for us. You know, I mean, I'm not going to be afraid of a wheel given the action. I don't think I'm going to be worried about sets here. The only thing I have to worry about is a set of aces, the case ace. I mean, really. I can't imagine this guy's got a suited ace four or suited ace three playing it the way he did. Is he really going to make... Would he really raise with ace four or ace three preflop? Probably not. Would he really raise with fours or trays preflop and then call a $30 raise to try to set mine? Probably not. Plus, we were under the gun. So if this guy has any kind of history at all in poker, he would know that somebody under the gun who limps then raises probably has a big hand. So he wouldn't probably have stuck around with fours or threes in his pocket. So... It feels like it's the best flop possible for us that's not a huge made hand. So I'm going to bet. I'm going to bet like, what's it, the pot's like 80?
80, yeah.
I'm going to bet like, I don't know, 55, 60 or something.
Sounds good. All right. All right, it says, nice flop for our hand. I'm hoping the villain either has a smaller ace and I have him trapped. We're first to act. And he says, I want to bet what would look like a standard continuation bet, hoping that the villain raises me. The younger players don't pay attention to how large your bet is in relation to the pot. They just look at the size of the bet itself. Interesting point, actually. And that said, I decided to just bet $30. And he says, remember, I want to get raised here.
Okay. I mean, I can see is it's interesting. We get a lot of hands, especially from Vic and stuff, people send in a hand and then tell us everything. You know what I mean? Like they, you know what I mean? Like they like, it's like an educational thing or something to me. And it's like, okay, if he knows it all about what's going to happen, why send in the hand? You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah, I can see that.
It's interesting. So he's just looking for a different point of view. So from my point of view, I think the pot's big enough already. When I'm down 300, I'm looking to grind my way back and make an $80, $90 pot every once in a while. And I'd be happy to take it down because, yeah, if the guy raises me, okay, sure, we want him to raise, so now he makes it 90, and then we shove. But we have aces with a king. How do we know what this guy doesn't have? I mean, I pretty much ruled out the hands that beat us, but there is one hand. There is one hand that we don't beat, that we're screwed against, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I guess so. I mean, it's a nice flop. It's definitely a nice flop, and it's...
All right, let me ask you this, though. So, if you want to get raised, which is his goal, right? Do you make the smallish bet that he did, which kind of looks like a I want to be called bet? Or do you make the bet that you mentioned, $50, $60, that looks like, oh my god, I'm scared of this flop, get out of my pot?
I guess it depends on the player that you're against.
I would think normally, though, I mean, if you're trying to get raised, somebody, the fishier bet is a larger bet, I think, isn't it?
Well, again, it's perspective, because what would someone doing that just hit the flop and didn't care about wanting to be raised, just wanted to take down the pot and value bet it, you know, he'd bet ABC poker is 55 to 60 here. So he's not, you know what I mean? This perspective, I can totally put a hand up in front of you now that says, this is how much that hand would bet. And then I can also say, the person who wants that to be raised, this is how much you'd bet. And it's the same hand or a different, you know, I mean, a different hand. So it's just perspective. To me, I can read into pretty much anything whatever he bets.
Oh, of course, you know, so that's part of that's why they play poker, right?
Right.
Everybody plays a little differently, and you're trying to figure out what they're trying to get.
I would want to be
just
raised.
In a vacuum. I want to look vulnerable if I'm trying to get raised, rather than look strong.
Yeah, I mean, it could be too.
I mean,
somebody bets 20.
You'd almost want to check here and let the guy bet.
That's true too. Although
I think the $30 is almost inviting a call. I think not so much a raise.
But the other thing too is I don't know
fun.
Vic's
if
next.
Called here, that's great. It's another.
What's his next move, Scott? That's the thing. I don't know if he's hoping to get raised to re-raise, or he's hoping to get raised to have this guy keep bluffing at it, and he just wants to keep calling him. Because once you bet a little bit and then he raises and you re-raise, he's folding unless he's got the nuts. You know, you're scaring him out of the pot then.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to get him to raise just to call.
Right. So I don't know. I'm just going to be straightforward.
To
these guys.
All this seems way too tricky for a standard 1-2 no limit game, I think.
Yeah, I do too. Especially when he categorizes the players as older and predictable and not predictable. If they're not predictable, that means they don't know what they're doing. So you're wasting all this on them. And if they're predictable, then you just play straight poker on them and you're going to take down these pots. Because this guy, if he's an older guy and he's probably got ace-queen, he's going to go to the mat with ace-queen. You're going to get all his money anyway.
I think so, right? I mean, and I guess that's what I'm looking at. We're hoping that we're up against an ace-queen, ace-jack, even an ace-10, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when you make this any kind of bet here, the first thing you have to think about if you're the other person is, does this guy have a bigger ace than me, or if he's just trying to represent that ace? And that's something else, right?
Yeah.
So, really, I don't know what kind of bet here doesn't get called by ace, queen, ace, jack, other than a really large one.
Right. If it's something that the guy can't afford, then you're...
But even a pot-sized bet, I think it's going to get called by ace, queen for at least one more street, right? Before the person starts to think, hey, maybe I'm up against ace king, I'll slow down.
Yeah. Again, I don't know if he's an older player and he's predictable, he's not going to raise your $30 bet. He's going to call it.
Right.
And if he's unpredictable and he's not really good, then you're going through all this for nothing. Just bet.
Right. Okay. All right. So where are we?
So he bets 30.
I make it 30 to break. 30 to go. All right. The original racer calls. Oh, wait, hold on. We already did that. Okay. Sorry.
That's the beauty of the show, is that it's not rehearsed.
There's a lot of $30 bets. All right. Remember, I'm going to get raised here. There we go. Villain thinks for a second and tosses in the call.
Yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
All right. So back to what I said. See, that's what I kind of thought would happen, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious whether what would happen if we checked, whether this guy would have bet, and maybe bet more than 30, or whether we bet 50, 60, something like that. Whether he would have also called, which is what we're kind of hope is a better result than we got here, right?
Right. I mean, right now it feels like he's losing value. Now, he could be slow playing us, and you know, he could have a set of aces, and he's slow playing us. Who knows? But, I mean, right now it feels like we just lost value on that street.
I think so, too.
Trying to get tricky with either a predictable player or unpredictable player.
Okay, good. We're on the same page. All right. With 140 in the pot, the turn is the four of clubs. So making the board ace of clubs, four of diamonds, tray of hearts, four of clubs.
No, I mean, that doesn't change anything, really, then. I mean, either the set of aces just filled up, but it doesn't make a difference because we're never going to win anyway. And I don't think somebody has a four. So the two clubs says, okay, maybe you want to protect against clubs, but he's not drawing the clubs here. He wouldn't be drawing with what he's doing. So it doesn't change anything for us. I mean, I think I'm still going to bet like 100.
Okay. So now you're going to bet more, right?
Yeah, I'm going
to
bet
you have
like,
to now. The guy showed that he just called a $30 bet. He's not going to fall for this bet small and raise thing.
Right. Maybe 100 is too much, though. I might bet like 75.
All right, right. But significant now. Now we know if our idea is to get money out of this guy is to bet bigger and not be as tricky, right?
Yeah.
All right. Our error says, after the villain's call on the flop, what hands can we put him on? He would have raised with ace-king or ace-queen, or maybe just call the $30 smaller aces. If he had a big pocket pair, I could see him raising small pre-flop and just calling the raise. These guys love to slow play. When the ace hits the flop, maybe call to look at another card. He may also have pocket fives or deuces with a gut shot draw. That story also makes sense. But I still favor a smaller ace. Yes, you could have pocket trays or fours, but those hands are unlikely. Okay, the turn pairs the board, puts out a club flush draw. What's the move? He says, I think he's got a smaller ace and called what he thought was a continuation bet on the turn. I think check raising is the best way to proceed. If he checks behind, I give up and little value allow him to hit his kicker, but if he has an ace, I expect him to bet. Sure enough, I check, and he bets the same $30.
Hmm. Checking's
interesting. I guess that's a fair analysis, but again, now it's $30. Now we have to raise, right?
Yeah, I mean, cause now you
what if
like,
we're in a weird spot we're behind now? That's now we went from walking the dog to being walked ourselves, right?
Yeah, and now he's got control of the hand.
Which probably doesn't change anything. We would have bet $70, and you know, if this guy is sitting on a four, then you know, probably he's going to raise us, and it's going to cost us more. So I really don't know if we're up against that hand, which seems unlikely.
I just don't know. I mean, I feel like a raise is...
Now, $30, I thought it sounded fishy when we bet the last street. Now it seems super fishy now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and why now? What do you hope to accomplish by raising? You hope he's going to actually have a hand to call you with when you do that? If you check raise him to 90 or something, then it's like, okay, what am I up against now? And what am I hoping for by raising this guy? Because if he's got nothing and he was bluffing, he's folding. But if you call the 30, you've lost value now significantly on this hand if you actually have the best hand right now. If you min-raise him, that looks fishy. You check min-raise, I think you're forced to call here. Because if you raise and he has nothing, he's folding. At least now you can maybe get something out of him on the river. But if you raise him and he's really only got ace rag, he might throw it away. If he's got kings, he's definitely throwing it away. You know, he might have thought you c-bet and call, didn't believe you, and then he was floating you or something, or just when you checked, now he's like, okay, you didn't really have an ace, you were just representing it, now you have this ace rag, I'm betting. Now you make it 100 to go or something, he's going to be like, oh, man. Now you've lost him. Now you've lost a fish. So I think you have to call now.
I think you do.
Which sucks. Yeah, so
like I
think you're losing value.
I'm concerned, too. I mean, this is, again, one of these unpredictable, just chasing kind of players here. Then, all right, maybe we're losing value by just calling, but I think I gotta give him some credence for having a big hand just trying to get more value out of us.
Yeah. It feels like ace-queen.
Oh, ace-queen would be awesome if that's the case, but I don't know whether $30 is the bet if you have ace-queen there, right? Because you got two clubs on board now. Not that we really are worried about us having clubs.
Yeah.
$30 is just such a weird bet.
It is a weird bet.
$140 pot. I mean, normally that's screaming, hey, I just try to get $3 more out of you. Please call.
Yeah. Jeez. All right, well, I'm just going to call. What does he do?
All right, with $170 in the pot, I want to start extracting value and set myself up for a river shove. I'm always playing for stacks.
Okay.
I decide on raising to $125. And this time he thinks for a bit before calling the extra 95.
Wow. This is crazy. I mean, what does this guy have? Do you have the same hand as us? I mean, really, what? I mean, unless
that's an excellent point, right?
Well, right, because what?
Because he raised pre-flop. I mean, not a lot, but he raised pre-flop and called. And
yeah.
Now he's cautious a little bit now here after putting out that weird $30 bet.
It went through my head before one of the streets that he might have had it, but the same hand, but I just, now it feels like it's the same hand, because what hand could just, I mean, if he had aces full, would he make that $30 bet, or would he check behind and hope that Vic...
Well, no, again, that's a good point. If he has aces full, I think that $30 bet makes sense. He's like, you know, hey, I've got this board crushed, let's see if I can get $30 more out of this guy, right?
But do you wait one more street? That's the thing, because you might fold. If Vic was blowing smoke and just bet the flop, hoping to take it down because he took control, you know, but he didn't actually, because he... So if he just bets the flop, and then a turn, he checks, that means he's afraid. Do we say, and we bet? You're going to lose him if he's really afraid, so you check behind
him. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, for a $30 bet into a $140 pot, that's almost like daring us to find out what we have, right?
Which is why I think you check, because you just, it looks so fishy, he might fold to that too, if he was just taking a stab at it.
Right, but if he doesn't have anything, he's not going to get you any value anyhow. I mean, I guess you could check behind and hope he bluffs at you. But
that's what I'm hoping for on the river, because you're not going to bet call anything, then you might as well get it on the river from him.
I mean, I guess the other thing too is you're kind of hoping at that point he has clubs and a club comes, and right.
Yeah, that's true too. You'd love to see me. Yeah, so I think I like to check behind if it,
yeah.
So.
I could make an argument for that, but I could also see aces full there making a 30, some kind of small bet, just hoping to get whatever value they can out of a hand, or they think it's crushed. And then, of course, if we raise and then thinks for a while and calls, that almost screams like he's got us beat, right?
Yeah.
Now he's like, oh my gosh, I was just trying to get 30 bucks out of this guy. Now he's raising me.
Yeah.
Now if I re-raise him, then he's probably going to shut down, but I'll do the Hollywood thing and call and then see what he does on the river.
See, that's a good thing, because to me, by Vic putting in the amount he did, I think we can look at Vic's stack and say he can't fold now.
Right.
So if I have aces full, I might as well
shove. Which is what Vic was trying, right?
Right.
He's trying to get it.
He's trying to get it all in. So why, if I had aces full, I think at that point I shove. I think we're probably at the same hand as this guy now. I think we have the same hand. I really do. Because why wouldn't aces full shove there now? Because there's no way Vic is folding now with all that money out there he just put in there. We started with five. We put, you know, six, then 30, then now what, this is 120. So I mean, he's committed now. So I would, if I had aces full, there's no way, I'm just calling. So I shove there. So this guy's got the same hand as us, it feels like.
Okay. All right. Vic says a big ace seems more likely for this hand opposed to straight or flush draws. The pot's now $390. Dealer puts out a nasty river card, the queen of spades.
Yeah, I knew it was gonna be a queen.
Making the board, ace of clubs, four of diamonds, tray of hearts, four of clubs, queen of spades. Vic says, I really hate this card. You know, he hit his three outer if he had ace queen, but on the bright side, he improved his kicker if he had a weak ace, and the flush and straights all missed.
Well, there's two trains of thought here. If the guy had shoved on the turn, we weren't going to fold. So I don't think we would have folded. So that means here on the river, even if the guy shoves, if we check and he shoves, I don't think we're folding. I mean, just because it's a scary card, he has to have hit a three outer. And would he have played ace queen this way the whole way? Maybe. I don't know if ace queen actually calls our huge check raise on the turn. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. So since I would probably call his all in, I'm comfortable checking and calling whatever he bets, you know, because if he does have ace queen, he might want to extract value, and I can save money.
True.
And if he has the same hand as us,
I think that's the best player if he has ace queen.
Yeah. So
hopefully he bets a smaller amount that we can
call and still save some money. So I think I'm going to check call. I don't think I'm going to bet here.
All right. Vic says he can hold more ace-jack or ace-10 or even ace-9 combinations than ace-queen, so maybe I shouldn't hate the river. I don't think I'll fold to his bet if I check, as there are more hands I beat than I lose to. Plus, he only called my raise on the turn. I have just under 300 behind. So I waste no time in moving all in.
Yeah, see, that was the thing I was saying, too, is that I just didn't know if I wanted to move all in or not, because I know that I would have called his all in on the turn, so why not put it all in and put it on him? But if he hits that queen, he's calling instantly. And the only hands that are going to, you know, we're only really only going to beat basically somebody who can't fold an ace jack, or, you know, somebody who just doesn't understand poker, like doesn't believe we have the ace and had kings. You know what I mean? Pocket queens could have made set there and not believe we had an ace, but would he really have not believed we had an ace that far into that hand? I don't think so. But, you know, we probably have the same hand as this guy, and he's going to call, and we're going to have both ace king. It just feels like that, but I don't really fault the shove. I just thought we could probably save some money. The guy might make a $100 bet on the end. We're happy calling, and we have 200 left.
Save a little bit of money, right?
You know, or whatever. So, but, okay, whatever.
All right. Says the villain seems uncomfortable and starts mumbling to himself. Can't hear everything, but I do hear him say, do you really have aces? Not encouraging.
Yeah, so that means this guy's probably got a set of queens and full house with queens, or he's got ace queen and he's worried.
So he eventually gives me a crying call and tables five of spades, four of spades.
What?
So he raised his suited connector pre-flop and called a $30 raise, another $30 bet on the flop. Got lucky. Hit his trips on the turn. I guess he also had a wheel draw and let me do the betting. Time to call it a night.
Oh, man.
All right, so this is interesting that your reaction is this, because this is kind of why I wanted to move this up while it was fresh in my mind. Because when I responded to Vic, I'm like, I know you don't want to hear this, Vic, but I really don't mind how this guy played this hand.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I can see the Rays was. I'm wondering, is this the unpredictable player? Because it certainly isn't an old timer predictable player that you characterized. Not.
But, you know, here's kind of what I'm thinking. All right, so, you know, he's got suited connectors, and granted, it's a really bad suited connector, right?
But there's the high hand thing.
There's the high hand thing going on, right? So he made it six just to give it a little bump, right? And then he got a customer. He got somebody to bump it to 30. All right, so, all right, now we can argue maybe he got a little out of hand with that $30 call or whatever it was. Was it 30 preflop?
It was...
Yeah,
the pot was 80.
Right. So he called an extra $24. But the interesting thing is Vic says, I'm playing for stacks, right? Yeah. I think everybody's trying to play for stacks here, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, you take 24, take a shot at... Here's the thing is now your head's up, you're in position, and the guy's under the gun and re-raised. All right. Obviously, we're scared that he has aces, kings, or queens, and we're really behind. But our cards are live, right? I can't put them on fives or fours.
Right.
So, you know, if we get a flop where we flop that flush, we get an open-ended straight draw or something like that, or the miracle two fours or two fives or a four and a five, we're going to get this guy stacked, right?
Right.
He has aces. I'm willing to put $24 there just to see that flop and see what happens.
Man, that's... I don't know. That's
So now we see a flop of ace-four tray, right? And so now we've hit a pair that we're not excited about, but at least we got a piece of it, right?
Right.
Plus we got this gut shot going on. And what was the bet again? $30?
30.
Where we were talking...
55 to 60.
Right?
So, yeah.
55 or 60, we're not sticking around for that gut shot in that four. We took our $24 shot to stack this guy, and we got a piece, but it's not good enough to put another 55, 60 bucks in. But $30? This guy's going to give me another shot at this? All right. And then, of course, the turn, the game's over now. Now we hit our third four.
Yeah.
Now it's just about getting... value out of it, and that's exactly what the guy said. You're like, all right, so you check, all right, $30. Let me see if I can get $30 out of you. And then Vic is like, raise. The guy's like, what's going on here? And then very smartly didn't re-raise him. He's like, all right, this guy wants to raise. He can't have a four. I mean, I guess the guy at that point was worried about the pocket aces, which is a problem, but there's no reason to shove at that point. Let's see what's going to happen. And of course, the shove on the river. Then you got to think, now am I really up against it? But would pocket aces shove that river? I don't think so. I don't know really why you felt uncomfortable about it. I mean, I guess pocket queens maybe cut up.
Yeah. So
here we're gonna go both there. No, I really don't think this guy. I mean, really, the only criticism I think anybody can have of how this guy played it was kind of the loose call of the re-raise. But even that, I can defend.
Yeah, the preflop one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think where Vic screwed up here was that smallish bet on the flop. And that's not a results-oriented thing. I think that's just in general there. I think, I think, and Vic is a much better player than I am and plays a lot and thinks about it too much. Not too much. He thinks about it a lot. I think at times he may think too much. And I think that's what he did. He was just trying to get all tricky here and ended up getting the rope tied around his ankle instead of the other guys.
Does the hand play differently if we play it standard preflop and raise it to 15? If the guy calls that 15 with 5-4. Now he's heads up, but the guy probably
is,
right.
I don't think, again, the 5-4 is kind of really loose. But I think if an under-the-gun player raises to 15 here, I'm not gonna take... This is not my opportunity to play 5-4 suited.
Right.
You know, we had a limper there. I'm like, all right, we'll put a little tickle there. I mean, I actually made it the normal 12 to 15 myself, but... that's fine. It wants a $6 tickle. But yeah, I think you're right. They run the gun raises. I'll wait for another stop. Time to.
Right, because the only reason he calls the repop is because there's so much money in the middle with suited connectors, and he knows he's probably live at that point.
Yeah, because there's dead money. There's a lot of dead money there, and he's live. And again, it's $24 in a 1-2 game. And, you know, if I can get a guy stacked for that, I mean, you can't make that play too often because you're going to go broke. But.
Right. Yeah. See, I think if we play it without... Because when I go to play 1-2, man, I am not trying to outthink players unless I can see that the player I'm playing against is someone who's actually on that level. Right. Other than that, I'm just sitting there playing ABC and stacking them when they think that their ace queen is good and I've got a set. You know what I mean? That's the only time I'm, you know, I'm just pushing my edge. That's all I'm doing. I'm not trying to outthink these players because they're, most of them aren't even thinking. And in this case, he got cute with the ace king and made it a way that this guy couldn't fold his 5-4 preflop. And then he got cute again and didn't bet enough because he's trying to get this guy to raise him or something. And this guy was just happy to call 30 to try to suck out with a wheel and ends up turning trips. And we dug the hole for ourselves. You know, sometimes when you're laying a trap, you fall in it yourself.
Yeah. Well, I think that's exactly what happened here. So I know he's upset and thinks this guy got lucky, but and I guess to some degree he did. But I think he'll let him get lucky. There's a difference between getting lucky and letting somebody get lucky.
And then again, on the river, you and I said, I think we check call, hope to save some money, because we're only going to get called by a better hand.
He's not going to put $300. He's not going to put us all in there.
He shoves $300. This guy's probably going to make it $100. If you bet 30 in the turn, he's probably going to make it $70 on the river, and you still got basically $230 left. You know what I mean? And then you can get that money back from him later. Now that you know how he plays again. I just that bet on the river was just basically a pair and a kicker. I know there's a pair of fours on the board, but you're only going to get called by a better hand by doing that. Why not check call? You know, I think we outthought ourselves here and made some mistakes. But
that's a good point, actually. The river, you kind of forced him into having an ace jack.
Yeah.
Ace 10, right?
Right. Or ace king to split it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So either way, we're what hand could call us there? Only a hand that wins.
I guess that's the argument. If he has ace king, maybe he's going to fold now and get the whole pot, kind of like an Omaha kind of situation.
Yeah, I hate risking my entire stack to get the same hand as me to fold.
Anything like that? Maybe ace 10? That's depends. Yeah. I mean, I guess he could be playing a weaker ace the whole time, but
yeah, because ace 10 or ace jack improves with that queen, but I just don't know if I'm going to put 300 out there with one pair of aces and a terrible kicker that I needed the board to help me on when I'm going against a guy who's betting me. So,
right. Yeah.
I just, that's too bad. All right. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.